This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you are listening to 20 Megabyte Podcast. Don't miss it.
APP Services, the Marzi and Boo1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 357. I'm Adam, and, well, of all the lunatic schemes, and here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Good grief, it's a Triceratops!
Mary Lang.
A bit of Venusian Ouija.
And Andy Nunny.
Lay on the Jeep for the Doctor.
This week we're looking at Invasion, followed by Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Yeah, see, now, Kirby, I'm assuming that since you are the king of pedantry, you have noticed how all the episode titles are wrong all the way through this story.
What do you mean?
Why are they wrong?
They're all wrong, aren't they? I mean, it's obvious they're all wrong, aren't they?
Are they?
Why?
Well, it should be Invasion Part 9 for a start, not Part 1. And therefore, it should be.
That was the Invasion.
It should be Invasion of the Dinosaurs Part 1 and not Part 2.
No. That was the Invasion you're thinking of, the Troughton story.
Right.
This was Invasion.
Yeah.
So that was one part story.
They were adding some dramatic tension there.
Yeah, but you see, it shouldn't be Invasion of the Dinosaurs Part 2. It should be Part 1, because there wasn't a Part 1.
Yeah, but they were holding off, thinking that we would...
Oh, Mary, please stop spoiling a good joke.
No, we haven't finished with this yet. No, it was a one-part story called Invasion, followed by a five-part story called Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Okay. So where's Part 1? Is Part 1 missing then?
Yeah,
Part 1 is called Part 2. They're just confused, everybody. Part 1 of Invasion of the Dinosaurs is
Part
2.
Exactly, so it's wrong.
Essentially, yes.
Okay. Now, does anybody know why it was in black and white?
Because they got rid of the colour print.
They destroyed the colour one.
I watched it in colour, though, just like to point out.
They did? Oh, okay.
If you get DVD, you can watch the colourised version. I didn't realise it was halfway through.
Well, it's an iffy colourised version, and I didn't even realise that was on the DVD until someone pointed out.
No, I'm on the same boat as you, Kirby.
There's an option, an extra feature to turn the colour on.
But I
watched this in colour when it actually went out. I remember it being in colour, so... there you go. But I have watched in colour again.
This was... Weren't these among the last ones that were destroyed before someone said, maybe we shouldn't be destroying these?
It was the last one. So it's
Adam, you saw this when it first came out. Mm. Did you already know what was invading, or were you surprised?
I was 8 years old rather excited by the prospect of dinosaurs at the end of the episode.
Did your family get the Radio Times?
Can't remember. A long time ago.
Because apparently the Radio Times spoiled it.
Yeah, I heard about that, but I mean, I wouldn't have been reading it. And we weren't Doctor Who fans, so we wouldn't have been sort of looking into the deep ins and outs of the story. We would have just thought, all right, Doctor Who's on grandstand's finished. Let's watch Doctor Who while we're having our dinner. So we watched Doctor Who. And then that's when I would have watched it. Anyway, moving on. Yes, this week we're going to be looking at Invasion of the Dinosaurs. But before we talk about that, I need to talk about a competition that we're running alongside Isle of Wight Comic Con. It's quite a simple competition. But bearing in mind, our listeners have probably got to be the worst listeners for entering competitions. This is why I don't bother doing them most of the time. Most of them end up as presenters on the show, but never mind.
I think I won the
don't
very
worry
competition.
Don't worry, listeners, if you win this competition, you won't be asked to become a co-presenter on the show. You will just get two tickets to Saturday at the Isle of Wight Comic Con. Now, all you've got to beg your pardon,
what date?
It's the 4th, I think. Let's have a look. 4th of November.
I was going to say, it might help you tell people what date it actually was.
Well, if you're actually on fair enough. It's the 4th and 5th of November is the Comic-Con. The 4th of November, the Saturday, is the date for which the tickets are. So it's the Saturday at the Comic-Con. Two tickets, like I said. And all you've got to do is join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, if indeed you're not already a member. There's a pinned post at the top of the page, which is the Isle of Wight Comic Con. All you got to do is like that post. Your name is then will become listed among the likers and go on to my list of people that's entered the competition. And then there will be a random number draw. Basically, you're going to go on a spreadsheet, and your number will be against the number on that spreadsheet. And then that random number generator, of which I have on my phone somewhere, will pick a number by random. Funny enough, being a random number generator.
Do I have number one, then, please?
No. Unfortunately, we're not eligible. So, bad luck, Andy. But the people that have so far liked the post, even before we posted it, well, of the people out there, Kirby isn't eligible. Isabella is going. She's got a ticket. Auntie Butcher's going. He's got a ticket. Benny Belton runs it, so he's not eligible. Deborah Melrose is going because she's one of us. Joshua Dybel, I think, is eligible. But I don't think he could go, but he's certainly the only name in the competition. I noticed that Ashley Hughes has deleted himself from that list, which makes it look like he's probably not really wanting to go, or he's already got a ticket for it. So, listeners, please, there's a competition available. You can get 2 free tickets for the Isle of Wight Comic Con on the 4th of November. Don't let me down. Please, please.
And the 5th.
What?
Is it a weekend ticket or a one-day ticket?
Right, point says deducted for Andy for not listening.
No.
Point deducted for Andy for not listening.
Deducted point. Because
I am deducting point because I said quite clearly about Saturday. 3 or 4 times it was a Saturday ticket. Right, there you go, point deducted for Andy. Right, okay, so that's it. Now we can talk about Invasion of the Dinosaurs. I will refer to this as the show goes on, the Isle of Wight Comic Con thing, because it's probably the most important competition we've actually run before, apart from the other ones that I ended up giving everything to a certain Scottish listener. Anyway, right.
Oh, I think the most important one was my jelly babies. I treasured those.
That, do you?
After then I ate them.
What about the other one, the scarf one in Kirby?
Did Aaron Butcher win one once?
Oh, this?
No, I don't think he did. I think Jeff Waddle did. That's who I was referring to.
Alan T. Butcher won the other scarf.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Thank you.
Ow,
right.
Bang my hand.
Pointed up to the master.
What did Jeff Waddle win?
Jeff Waddle won my little signed card done by Robert Shearman, and he also won a little picture of some Cybermen, Mondasian Cybermen, before we knew that Mondasian Cybermen were in the... Anyway, moving on. Right, so episode 1 begins with a very damp panning shot around, the River Thames area. And
once again, that's actually used to be my running route around London, because I'm not working there anymore. But I used to go from there, from Westminster Bridge, go down to Vauxhall Bridge and loop way back around again. So actually, it's quite surprising how little that has changed since it was filmed.
It's probably protected. But yeah, it's...
Master?
How long did we get into this, it then
this
before
was,
that happened?
This was special... This was unapproved by the BBC... filming where Patty Russell, the director, went out with the cameraman and just took these shots at like 5 a.m.
Yes.
On a Sunday morning.
I thought it might be that early, but I did also notice there's some shots of houses that look like they've been bombed. I take it that's just basically a street that was being demolished anyway to make way for high-rise flats or something.
Probably.
Mm. Ooh, he didn't know that means.
Because there is an excellent now and then... special feature on the second disc of this set, which sorry, are we keeping someone up?
We were out last night and Zach kept us up till late.
Anyway, there's an excellent now and then feature where they go to many of these places and take the same shot. And in a lot of cases, there are new buildings.
Okay.
Look, if you come to London, Kirby, it's always been rebuilt. There's cranes everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's the city technology, isn't it? Anyway, right.
Yeah.
So the Doctor and Sarah arrive in a sort of...
TARDIS.
Well, yes, in a sort of park, I suppose, a kids' playing park. And they're sort of wondering why everything's so quiet. Then we see some soldiers sort of flying around in a jeep. And an obviously stereotypical looter. Actually, it looks quite... We know the road sign for burglars. He actually looks stereotypically like the burglar in the road sign.
Okay.
Anyway, so he's obviously looted something.
You know who that is, don't you?
No, but you're going to tell me, I suppose.
Terry Walsh, of course.
I was going to say Stuart Fell, actually.
I thought it might have been Terry Walsh, but the trouble is you can't really see it clearly from these shots. It isn't Terry Walsh afterwards, though, when you see a close-up of his face. That's a different actor altogether. Anyway. Yes?
No, okay, yeah. Terry Walsh is the looter later on when they're captured.
Okay. Well, anyway, so this chap... He finds himself looting in a what I suppose is a jewellery shop, although if you look in the cabinet, it's hairbrushes and things. And and then Sarah and the doctor are sort of still going around trying to find out what the hell's going on. Actually, I think there was a thought about trying to find phone unit at some point, but they couldn't get through. And then we cut to Unit HQ, another version of Unit HQ. Mike has returned to his day job.
It was a temporary one, though, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so it wasn't actually Unit HQ proper.
By the amount of Unit HQs we've had, all of them must have been temporary.
This is a temporary HQ just for the emergency.
Yeah, we've said that, Kirby. Can you keep up, please?
Sorry, the dogs are doing their usual. There's something going on in that room. I need to come in because I hear voices, and then not coming in, I open the door up for him.
By the way, the park that the TARDIS arrived in was Canterbury Gardens in Kingston upon Thames in Surrey. Oh,
just down the road. It's about 5 miles away where I live.
Well, you ought to go down there,
Mary. How interesting are you finding these particular facts at the moment?
Not much. But I was going to tell Kirby that he's right, that Terry Walsh is the looter.
Which looter? This looter or the looter who's been arrested?
Warehouse looter.
Oh, God, the dog wants to come in.
Oh, okay.
So is he a looter? Does he play a lute?
God, that's been in Kirby's standard of humour from last week. Bad luck, Andy.
Sorry, mate.
Very, very nearly got for that. But I'll let you
that, that was weird. I was clicking further into the episode on the DVD.
Wish I could click further into the episode.
My DVD software suddenly shifted it to color for half a second.
Well, just play it in color. That's usually the best way to get around it. Anyway, we've got this. The preview I've got on the other machine here is in color. I don't know how that worked. Probably because I previously watched it in color. Hang on, the dog is. Is trying to demolish my rather expensive camera equipment. Sit down.
We are sitting down. I always said that, Kirby. Can you peek up?
Where are we? The doctor and Sarah end up in a garage, I think. And
stop flapping your ears.
Sorry.
A pterodactyl starts flying around, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Brilliantly rendered pterodactyl, that's got to be said.
Actually, it starts swinging around on its obvious thread.
Yeah.
And
going sideways and all sorts of stuff.
And then we meet General Finch.
Pterodactyls fly sideways. Didn't you know that?
Well, they might do. Who knows? What's he doing now? Hang on.
Settle down.
I'll be throwing him on the settee in the other room in a minute, and I'll get him set up.
Yeah, for a long time, this first episode was the only episode I'd ever seen of the story, and
but the way we're going, it will be the only episode we're going to see of the story. It's a six-part story, Kirby. That's it.
What?
Oh dear.
Doctor being out.
I say, folks, I think we're going to calm down a bit. I think he's going to get a bit mad today.
I think it's going to be a little edgy, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we better play really straight. What do you reckon?
I agree, Andy.
Thank you. Well, Kirby, you with us?
What?
Kirby's never with us.
No, okay.
Anyway, we meet...
For some reason, none of you is moving on the video.
Oh,
but that's okay.
God, does it matter? Right, point out for Kirby for getting distracted by the video feed. Where's me? There it is. And
thank you, sir. May I have another?
No. Right. Well, probably. Anyway, right. So, like you were saying, we meet the horrible General Finch. Yes, he was in Talons of Wang Chiang, but he wasn't in it yet. So we're not going to talk about the Talons of Wang Chiang, because everybody seems to talk about that. All right. Yes, so General Finch. He's playing a character. He's an actor.
Master. Did you notice how I, in my longer request for feedback, after your request, I asked people to share their theories on how Lee Sin Chang survived the giant rat in the Victorian London sewers and passed his knowledge of giant animals on to Nider.
No, I didn't see that. Anyway, moving on. So the
first round in an amazing competition of who has the worst giant animal in it. And Dr. Who's story.
Marvelous. What is that right then. Clanging noise?
I don't know. It's somebody's phone going off.
My chimes. I can close the window.
Is it windy, darling? Is it windy where you are?
We're having a very windy period here, so I'll close my window.
It's quite a pleasant sound. Right then, so where are we? So the doctor thinks it's a good idea after the looter drops his bag to carry the looter's bag with him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And therefore leading to him and Sarah being arrested for looting. Now, the chap who's at the desk, he looked quite familiar, actually. The one, the soldier with a tash at the desk. I'm sure he's been in Doctor Who before. And then they take the pictures of them. They're very amusing. And I'd forgotten it was actually the third Doctor that said, this is my better side. Obviously, I thought that was a sixth Doctor quote. But in fact, originally a third Doctor quote. There you go. I should have used that as my quote, shouldn't I, Mary?
Yes, you should have.
Yes, I should have done it. Yes. Thank you very much, Mary.
So which is your better side, then?
Point there for Mary. Hey. Mary's got all sides of Mary are the best.
Sides.
What I could have done on the quiz is actually what number was on the blackboard.
I was just looking that up because I just remembered that you tend to do things like that.
Yes, but I forgot.
Got it written down there. There it is. Both numbers. Got it already.
Oh, very good, Andy. Yes.
177780.
Hang on.
Yeah, you're right. You're not going to ask it now. One. It's one, not O. It's one.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Never mind. So the looter that they meet while... sort of waiting for their sort of trial. It's quite right tough nut, he is. He talks for ages. His face goes all tough. And then while he's chatting, a Tyrannosaurus Rex bursts through a building and then sort of waddles, because they sort of fire a couple of bombs and it waddles away. Completely different rendition of a Tyrannosaurus Rex than the one we saw in, what was that film? Jurassic Park.
Well, that's because Jurassic Park was filmed a lot later.
Yeah, those were very well done.
Was it?
Yeah.
Also, and well, like, there was a,
the dog is up to his old
master.
No, it's not. Oh, yeah.
Master?
Hang on.
This is going to be a long episode. This is going to be a long episode. But I'm glad I'm not at work tomorrow. I'm tomorrow off work. It could be a late night, kids. Well, for us two, anyway. For you two, yeah. Oh. Oh, that's Mary gone as well. Hi, Kirby. You stay with me.
What?
Right.
We've lost Sorry. Mary.
Just banish the dogs of the other room again. Yes?
Master, there's a lot of... apparently, after the first episode, a number of kids wrote into the BBC complaining that it wasn't a Tyrannosaurus. It had the wrong number of fingers, and it was sort of an Allosaurus, even though it was so poorly done.
Also, it didn't look anything like Mark Bolan.
God's sake.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really, Kirby? You honestly don't know? Did you understand that reference, Kirby? Mary?
Basically, they're in here. He's clambering around here to try and get in the corner. Then he's clambering.
Yeah, but he's right, Kirby and Mary. There was a band called T-Rex. Lead singer's called Mark Bolan.
God.
He's another one of those who died at the age of 20. He was killed by the 27 Curse, died in a car crash. At the age of 27, but he was lead singer of a band called T-Rex.
Oh, okay.
Rider White Swan.
Never mind. Right. This is the sort of thing that could be Googled at a completely different time to now, where we're trying to go through a six-part story. So, right, the Doctor and... what's her name again? Oh, yeah, that's right. They have their picture taken and their photos arrive in a file at Unit HQ. And I love the bit where Benton's looking through the pictures. Oh, have a look at this, Brigadier.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Obviously turns out to be...
Benton is particularly good in this story.
He's one of his best, isn't it?
Mm. Indeed. So at this point, obviously, they're going to get rescued by the Brigadier and Unit, but the Doctor decides he's going to escape with the looter just before the looter... does the dirty on them, but they still get away, and they get away in a jeep and then get rearrested, And the Jeep stops because a rather badly rendered T-Rex starts roaring at them.
Have you noticed that the one soldier on the left is not shooting at the T-Rex
at
all?
Yeah, it's shooting to the left of it, isn't it? Yeah. There must have been some sort of tactic behind them shooting to the left of the
now, I don't know if anyone's... I don't know, Master, if you saw the video that Matthew posted a few days ago of someone's redone that particular scene with CGI.
Right.
And he was saying that he wants someone to... He would like the BBC to redo the whole thing with CGI dinosaurs. And I disagree.
I disagree because it's not really about... Even though they are rubbish, everybody accepts the dinosaurs are rubbish. Yeah, they can't get around that. They did their best for what they had. And I think, to be fair, for what they had, they did rather well with it.
This is the way this one should be, as you'll hear when I...
What it's about is the story
and the
acting.
At the end, I'll give my opinion.
Yes, me too. So, but it is a bit embarrassing. But I think if you watch it enough, you just get used to it and accept that it is what it is, basically. Anyway, moving on.
Exactly.
So, when the soldiers are shooting at the badly rendered T-Rex, Sarah and the doctor get away and hide in a garage. And then they're just about... that's right. Sarah looks out the window and goes, oh, soldiers! And it's a brigadier.
Yes.
What on earth was that? Somebody's squeezing a microphone. It went.
Not me.
Yeah.
Well, certainly not
it's
me.
Not me it's not me breaking wind this week.
No. Right. That's right. And a caveman turns up. Sorry, just before they get rescued by.
No, he's not a caveman.
He's not a caveman.
What is he then?
He's from the Middle Ages.
He's a Middle Ages man.
He was like at the Awakening when that guy came back.
Because he says Richard is king.
Yeah.
Okay. Middle Ages man turns up then, and then he disappears quite quickly. And then, let's say, the Brigadier turns up, rescues them, takes them back to unit HQ. And
that's the doctor nearly kills him.
Nearly kills himself about sugar he had in his tea. Yes.
The sound effect of the time scoop was extremely irritating.
Yeah.
I was watching with Fred. That we watched this whole thing over two nights, and... we had to turn it down any time the time scoop was turned on because it was just so screeching and horrible.
But there have been more irritating effects on Doctor Who before and since. So
we had Adric for a start, didn't we?
Yeah, and there's been a lot of the music by a certain composer that I will not mention.
Probably someone I like.
So, yes, so... the doctor then gets a briefing on what's going on. He's sort of introduced to Finch, who he immediately doesn't like, and then he realises, because he's like the boss, he creeps for him a little bit and says, "How did you?" But that particular part of the relationship doesn't get very far. They immediately dislike each other. Yes,
Master. As you look around this quote unit headquarters, you can see children's pictures on the wall. They took a school.
Yeah, it's a school, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really a school for children, because if you look at the posters and the drawing on the blackboard, the posters are the inner workings of the ear, and the drawings on the blackboard are about the optic nerve. And I don't think it squares up with those little kiddie pictures that have been quickly pasted up on the walls.
Yeah, you're probably right, Mary. Anyway, what did we get up to? So then a Stegosaurus turns up. And
great, it's a Stegosaurus.
Yes, and then the doctor and Mike flirt with each other. Sorry, Sarah and Mike flirt with each other.
Why did I say the doctor and Mike flirt? Where are you going with this?
Right.
Fuck if I'm going.
But
there.
This is where you find out that Mike's obviously gone a bit stir crazy, I suppose. Since the Green Death episode.
Have you read the book,
Sarah, about the maggot?
What, this book?
Thing. As if she knows what he's talking about. And she even acknowledges as if she does.
Mm. Well, maybe she saw a bit of it on the news. I think they did have media coverage, didn't they, at the whole thing.
Have any of you read the book of the novelisation of this story? Because it actually goes into... that one, Kirby, because it actually goes into more in-depth, and he actually talks about the fact that Mike actually says he had some sort of breakdown after the Green Death story, and that's what's sent in the way he is. So I think that's his story. Actually gives him some backstory that way.
Yes. Yeah, this and my copy of the book, which is the American copy, specifically says this is the fourth Doctor, which is very strange.
Yeah, no, you saw that on Facebook, yes. Well, actually, for Americans, he's the first. No, actually, for Americans, the fourth Doctor, the first Doctor, wasn't he?
Now, these particular editions have a great foreword by an introduction by Harlan Ellison.
Yeah. My hero, Doctor Who.
Anyway, right, so where do we get up to? So episode 2, and we're still faffing. Oh, yeah, then we meet the scientists, one of which is played by Martin Jarvis, who are clearly behind the whole time scoopy thing. And one of them, I think it's Peter Miles, is it, plays the baddie?
Yes, it's Snyder.
Yes.
Yeah, now he talked about, I saw a little interview with him about this, and he's a lovely chap. He comes across as himself, as a really nice chap, but he sounded to me like he didn't usually play baddies, but he always played baddies in Doctor Who.
Yeah,
well, so. 3 times. I mean,
but when did he play a goodie then?
No, he must have done other things other than Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, I know that. I'd love to see him in something where he's not playing a baddie, because he seems to always play slightly.
He was in Blake 7. I haven't seen all of Blake 7, so I don't know.
Okay, but did he play a baddie?
If he was a baddie or a goodie
exactly.
in it.
I bet he played a baddie.
He was in Moonbase 3, which I believe was being made around the same time as this.
Which are not so
years before, I think, yeah.
And he's been in The Sweeney, Dixon of Doc Green, Poldark, Bergerac.
Shut up. Right, so around this time we find out that Mike is probably heavily involved in the whole thing, but he does make it quite clear that he doesn't want anybody to hurt the Doctor. What else is happening? It's interesting, you get the what is the politician bloke? I can't remember his name now.
Charles Glover. Yeah. Charles Glover MP, the Right Honourable.
Initially, you don't realise he's involved in it. It works out that virtually everybody's involved in it when we get through the story. But the Doctor's made this rather pretty-looking ray gun thing. It's a very sophisticated-looking device.
Yes.
Mike is told to sabotage it by sticking a little disc on it, which is apparently going to... And how they knew that... although they're scientists, but how they knew that the composition of the weapon and that the little gadget will stop it from working, I do not know. But nevertheless, it did. But
it's
the trouble
it's
is...
It's a television science fiction series, Adam.
That's the one.
Yes.
Nevertheless, it did stop it working, and when the Brontosaurus, which they wanted to catch, disappears, Tyrannosaurus Rex turns up and threatens the Doctor's life, much to the annoyance of Mike, who said, look, I told you I didn't want the Doctor hurt.
It's amazing that nobody spotted the fact that Mike raced up, raced the Doctor by getting his thing to work, and no one seemed to say, hey, Mike, how did you do that? How do you do that?
It might have been because they weren't watching, because they were all looking up at the T-Rex. They weren't actually watching Mike at all. Although his eyes looked quite good. I must admit, the eyes of the T-Rex did look quite cool.
The eyes had it, obviously.
Yes. Anyway, so...
The eyes are kind of... upside down, though, with the way
they
open. I still
think the colour of them, the piercing yellow, was quite good. So Mike shoots the T-Rex and it falls down and smacks itself in the mouth. I think that probably would have broken its jaw, but...
kind of bounces a little bit like the rubber that it is.
Yeah. God knows how they managed to get such a beast into a hangar. But did they build a hangar around it? I don't know, but that was quite interesting. Mary's shaking her head. But anyway, they did manage to get it...
I wondered that myself.
They did manage to get it into a hangar, so... So, Mike is constantly moaning at the scientists because he said, look, I want to go through with this whole thing, but I don't want you to hurt the Doctor. The scientists aren't really bothered by it. So there's the T-Rex, meanwhile, is sort of in this hangar thing with a little window so they could all watch it through the window.
So they could use CSO.
And they could use CSO, yes. But
through the square window as well.
At the time, it would have looked quite good, apart from the fact the dinosaur itself didn't look quite good. Imagine you're using a bit of your own imagination in these circumstances. And you've got to do that to a certain degree when the new Sharda comes out with animation filled in.
Looking forward to that.
Well, I'm looking forward to that because...
I'm looking forward to it as well.
Thank you. But it's a similar sort of thing. You've got to use your imagination. You've got live action and animation combined to make a story. So, but it's probably the best thing they've done with it. And the fact that Tom Baker's filled in all the missing bits and so's Lala Ward. And I think it's a fantastic project and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing it.
So when we... Well, does anyone remember when that's coming out?
Well, I'm hoping it comes out before we actually have to do Shardo, which is probably
in a couple
of
years' time. That's what I was wondering, if we could use that one.
Yes, I imagine it does, yes. That's right.
Since we've done Shardo before, and we've talked about all the versions, I'd like to use that new one.
Yeah, well, I'd like to do it in order. Will you stop knocking your microphone, Andy? I'd like to use it in order of broadcast, so I think it will be all right by then. Meanwhile, Sarah goes back and takes a picture of the T-Rex, which rather disturbs it, wakes it up.
Yes, it ever did it occur to anyone that her taking flash pictures through a window.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The only thing she'd have a picture of
is a window.
Is a window.
Yeah.
I was going to make that very point.
But that's why she went.
She goes into the hangar.
She does. That's why she goes into the hangar.
She does. But initially, she's taking all of her pictures through that window.
True.
Well, she can see the preview on it because obviously it's set in the future. You'd have a digital camera.
That's right. That digital camera, you know.
Oh yeah, you're right. All right. Yeah.
So someone locks the door and locks her in. And she's in great danger from this Tyrannosaurus Rex. And then the doctor, I love the bit where he sort of comes in and falls over. He trips over her, basically, but where she's by the door. But she does get whacked by a bit of wood because the T-Rex keeps banging its head on the hangar's sort of, what they call it, beams and stuff. It's roofing. She's got a bit of a bang on the head. But that's not the half of her troubles, because the next thing that happens to her, that lovely politician bloke that takes her into his office. She's very trusting in this story, it has to be said. She falls for it several times. Yes.
He's an MP.
Yeah, it's a good reason to trust him then, isn't it? Isn't it, Andy?
Yes.
Andy's gone all quiet.
I've got a couple of mates who are MPs.
Now, we've got a friend who's an MP. Well, wants to be.
No, he's not.
He will be one day. He just run for Parliament in a different constituency. How do you say that word?
Constituency.
Yes, he'll run for Parliament in a different constituency, and then he'll win. Right then. So, yes, Sarah then ends up going into this cupboard with a politician. Not the wisest thing to do, but then she does, and then she ends up finding out that he's a bit of a baddie, and where she's in the seat and that light shine, and it reminds me, there's an episode of Star Trek which they use a strange chair with a hypnotic light, and this is the second time we're counting these that Sarah Jane has done her possessed acting. Well, Elizabeth Sladen has done it, I should say. So two episodes running.
Who changed her clothing, by the way?
I suspect that dirty politician bloke did.
Yeah.
Took advantage of the situation. But, or was it that Weinstein bloke? Oh, sorry, that's very topical.
Yes, quite, thank you.
Oh, dear.
So she wakes up, like you say, on a spaship. A spaceship, ooh, in inverted commas.
Great surprise ending, yeah.
With a apparently quite nice-looking chap looking at her, called
Mark. I've seen Terence Wilson perform live for the Guildford Shakespeare Company a couple of years ago. Brian Blessed, who's our patron, was going to play King Lear. He collapsed on stage and replaced by Terence Wilson.
Yeah, Wilton. You first said Wilson. It's Wilton. No,
well, Brian Blessed collapsed on stage, did you say?
It's a couple of years ago.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
He was playing King Lear at the Holy Trinity Church, Guildford Shakespeare Company. He's actually the second person in the cast that I know, because Chris Porter, another guy, he played the voice of the Winder in The Beast Below.
Ah.
Who did?
He's a guy called Chris Porter. He played the voice of the Winder in Beast Below.
Anyway, right, so there's another scene in Unit HQ, or basically at the Doctor's little office, where Finch is sort of saying how incompetent the Brigadier's men are, and the Doctor moans about the chains that were weakened to allow the T-Rex to escape, while Mike is cringing because he's still sort of annoyed that people might die.
The question is, what authority does Finch have over the Brig? Because the Brig...
Well, he's a general.
I agree with Andy.
I agree with Andy too.
He's not British Army. He's unit. Yeah.
Well, yes. the general does say much later in the story that he has authority over all the troops, including unit. He says that.
He does, but why? That makes sense.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Then we meet the Doctor's new car that was first on Blue Peter a little bit earlier than it was in this, but.
I miss Bessie.
The Blue Peter episode, I think it's a bonus on one of these things, does explain its composition, this particular car. But it's rather cool, has to be said.
Yeah, it's in Planet of the Spiders. It's not on this set of discs. This set of discs only has a little thing where the Doctor drove it into a circus ring.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got the two discs set. Because yeah, Robert Haynes, remember him? He very kindly bought me this particular set here. So that the Invasion of the Dinosaurs. He bought me this set. Very kind of him, Robert. Trouble is, it was Region 4. Couldn't play the blooming thing. So I got to the stage on Monday thinking, I can't watch it. So I had to buy it off Amazon. And this is my Amazon copy. So I could actually watch
it. So that's not the copy that Robert bought you then?
No, I still got the copy of Robert Got Me Somewhere. And it wouldn't even play it on the DVD software because it said it's region specific.
What is Region 4?
Pardon?
What is Region 4?
Australia.
Okay. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. So I had to buy it off Amazon. Fortunately, Amazon, the gods of Amazon Prime delivered it the next day, so I was able to watch it.
I love Amazon Prime.
I love Amazon Prime.
No, I do.
Anyway, we do. It's very important to our family. Look, I mean, you can find Amazon Primes everywhere. Things everywhere in this house. But I'm not going to talk about that now. Right then. So, yes, then we meet Edith from Allo Allo. But she's not talking in a French accent. So I'm a bit confused
by this. Master. She's Clara the Clown from the Celestial Toymaker.
Is she now?
Yes.
Splendid.
Wow. No, she's not now. She was then. That's in 1989, that was. She isn't now.
But she's quite sinister, isn't she? Oh, if she doesn't conform to our way of thinking, we shall have to destroy her.
But she's called Ruth. I mean, straight away, the name Ruth to me has got all sorts of bad connotations.
Has it? I don't want to know.
Personal,
I don't want to know.
Personal thing. You definitely don't
okay,
want
well,
to know.
Okay, we're moving on. Sarah is shown basically that there's a troop of spaceships to try, and they've been on this spaceship for 3 months.
A troop of spaceships?
And sorry to keep you awake. Oh, are you coughing there? I thought you were falling. I thought you were yawning there, Mary. I do apologise. Very comfortable, this seat. Oh, dear, right.
But I just put my mic off.
Yes. So the Doctor whizzes around, and he's got this little device that is singular, finding out where everything's going on, so I can't think of the word. So he goes into this tube station and ends up following Martin Jarvis. But I think he gets spotted because he goes in the list. I'm pretty sure he gets spotted.
No, so they notice the list being used.
Yeah. So they look at their CCTV.
What do you mean? He's not wearing a leopard suit. How can he be spotted?
Point deductive for Kirby for one of the worst attempts at humor ever. I can't even be bothered to play that.
Hey, I got that. Doesn't it count that that's an old Goon Show joke?
No, it does not. So anyway, they spot him on the
CCTV. Hey, I'm an American who knows about the Goon Show.
Never mind. So they set a pterodactyl upon him again for the second time, so he can hit it with a broom. This time, though, you see like a video of the screen. So they've got this little TV that can look back in 65 million years and view these creatures, which is a device which is fascinating in itself and would be a great thing to tool to just look at dinosaurs, view things that far back without having to actually go there. Nevertheless, he uses it to beam this pterodactyl.
Shall he use it to get all the missing episodes?
Yeah, that would yeah. Anyway, the Doctor fights it off with a broom. Sarah, meanwhile, is more or less saying that what the people on the spaceship are talking about is a load of rubbish. The Brigadier joins the Doctor, and then they go back to Unit HQ to have a chat with the lovely sort of minister bloke. Very nice man.
Charles Grover.
That's the one. And so Sarah chucked in the remembering room. I think it's called the remembering room.
Reminder room.
There's two different classrooms. There. The one that's got the eye and all that, that's a different classroom than the one that's got the
Well, schools do have different classrooms in them.
Yeah, okay.
They don't just have the one.
It's not mixed up.
Okay.
God. So Sarah then is getting bored to tears by the remembering thing. It reminded me a little bit of...
Reminder
thing, but reminded me a little bit of Smile. And it also and it also reminded me a bit of, there's another Doctor Who story in which they went Colony in Space. There was a bit a similar sort of thing to
the
that.
What?
Oh, space.
Colony in Space, when they talked about what had happened on Earth, reason why they were trying to mine different planets.
It reminded me of the space whale one.
Beast Below.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, the Beast Below.
Yes, Kirby.
Yes, you're right, yeah.
Point for Kirby.
Thank you.
So, also, for me, it was Ark in Space. There's some bits
yes,
in there.
Yes, that's a good one, Kirby. And a reference there for Andy.
Hey, we both got our points back. We're back in the
brilliant stuff. Anyway, yeah, so one of the sort of... Well, they're not scientists, are they? The travellers, I suppose you call it, is not 100% sure with the attitude.
But there was a journalist... There was an athlete,
Sarah.
And was she a novelist?
I think she was, yes. No, he was a novelist, wasn't he?
Yeah.
The man was a novelist.
Terence Wilt was an athlete.
Yeah, the man was a novelist.
Okay.
Right. So, that's right. Then the doctor gets completely bamboozled and was really gullible when he gets a phone call from Peter Miles. Oh, would you mind coming down to see us?
Come on, mate. On your own.
Cause
yes, alone.
Yeah. And, he's basically framed and as if the Brigadier would you know...
Which I don't understand, because these dinosaurs are appearing all over London. Yeah. So the fact that one is randomly appearing there, and they say, see, he's the one.
Yeah.
Like,
oh. Also, they've appeared before the Doctor appeared on the scene, so it's like...
I don't think so, but...
I actually think the Brigadier actually knew what was going on, was playing along to get the Doctor
that's,
away.
That's what I thought he would do, but I don't think he actually was in the script, but I think that would have fitted the script.
I didn't think so. I thought he was convinced.
Yeah. So the Doctor gets marched back to Unit HQ, and somewhere along the line, Benton, who's left to guard the Doctor, says, "Okay, Doctor, you're going to have to overpower me, aren't you?" And it's a lovely scene.
Yeah. This is probably John Levine's best ever story.
It was.
He really was outstanding.
It was, but what I'm saying is a bit. The Doctor just throws him onto the floor face first.
I know. Wasn't he? Yeah.
There's
letting down gently.
There's a feature on the second disc with basically just this scene with John Levine talking about it.
Well, being thrown onto the floor face first.
Well, no, this whole scene with the. Well, yeah, that part, but he's just giving commentary on the entire scene.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, I'm just moving forward a little bit. Sarah, meanwhile, manages to get out of the room and starts poking around a little bit and basically tells Mark, "Look, this isn't a spaceship. I can prove it. Let's go out for the airlock." But you'll be killed. We'll all will be. Oh, well, it's worth a try. So she opens the door and goes out, and then Mark's like, "Oh no! She's actually in the reminder room."
We're going to leave her there a little bit longer.
Yeah, she's having a sleep. So meanwhile, the Doctor sort of has a little drive around in his jeep around some very cool little deserted dock areas, which are now very expensive parts of London. Now, to be fair,
it's really nice around there.
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah,
I know what they mean.
But it's a lovely empty warehouse he drives around in the jeep, just for the sake of it. Yes, Kirby.
Yeah, they used to use that in a lot of shows at that time.
Yeah.
Some of the other areas that he's driving around is that a gas works inside, and he passes by a pub on a corner, which was the pub for the workers at the gas works.
Well, there you go. Anyway, there's also a couple of scenes of him driving, close-up scenes. He's just tapping the wheel, smiling away to himself. Which I thought,
he loves driving.
He does. And Sarah.
There's one great scene where him and the Brig are driving, and the Brig's driving. Next scene, you see the Doctor driving. Then we see again the Brig's driving again.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah.
Didn't notice that one, but on Andy, I suppose. Go on then. Well spotted. Unless I find out, of course, it's not true. Then Sarah...
No, I read about that one. I just didn't spot that one. So it's true.
Oh,
yeah, okay, I'm not saying it's not. Okay, moving on. Sarah gets all the way back to the office and sneaks out once she's heard that the you know, the politician bloke has disappeared, and she's got to find General Finch to tell him all about it. That really trustworthy General Finch. Oh,
no.
Meanwhile, the doctor starts.
Well, she does say herself, "I really picked my friends," and she, yeah. Yes.
But the doctor, yeah. Meanwhile,
quite,
is
she was quite gullible, wasn't she?
The doctor, meanwhile, is sort of trying to get himself lost in the woods. What I thought was quite good about these wood shots is it's beautifully shot all around. The camouflage gear the soldiers had on actually worked really well. You couldn't really see them that well. And it was just beautifully cinematographically shot. I really didn't like that. And also the helicopter shots, where you could have been actually shot by a drone following a helicopter now. They were really, really nicely done. And
it's go ahead.
Well, there was padding, obviously, for the story. But I really enjoyed this padding, because I was just watching it as a filming experience. You know, obviously, as a filmmaker myself, you tend to get engrossed in looking at the way shots are composed and the way the directors decided to put the cameras and stuff like that, and the rain and things like that. And I think I absolutely love those scenes. I don't really care about
that. It's beautiful, but it convinced me that the time machine was really working. Because in the earlier in the program, when we're watching shots of London and all that, it's obviously late fall because the streets are full of leaves and the trees are naked.
Yeah.
And then when the doctor drives out to this, you know, this area for this chase,
Wimbledon.
It's full summer, warm, you know, it's full leaves and grass. And so I'm thinking, gee, that time machine is very efficient.
Yeah. Well, Mary. It's
great, brilliant writing, Mary.
Mary, it's the 15th of October today, which is autumn, not fall. I've been walking around all day, shorts and t-shirts. It's so warm.
Andy, I love the autumn, not fall line. That gets a point. That is fantastic.
Yeah, but no, it's been so warm this weekend.
I'm not talking temperature. I'm talking we go from naked trees with leaves all around to full
blossoming. Our rosebush is sitting in full bloom.
Yeah, this is slightly moving away. Mary's talking about the story, and Andy's now talking about autumn as it is now. Yes, no, we're trying to get slightly distracted.
It's not only fall here.
Yes, Kirby.
Master, those woods are Wimbledon Common.
Yes, Dan. Where are the Wombles then?
They're underground.
Right, back in the office, before Sarah meets the lovely General Finch, there's a new soldier in the office we haven't seen before. Good Lord.
Bryson.
Hang on, something's just happened in the other room. I've got to find out what it is.
Uh-oh, better find out.
It's all right. It's Deb bursting in on the dogs and telling them off because they're making a racket. Yes, there's a new soldier who hadn't been in the story before now.
Bryson.
Yes. I presume he's there to fill in an actor who had to leave the story for one reason or another. Kirby's now looking it up.
No, if so, I don't know, because I didn't have a chance to do as much research for this one as usual.
Okay.
Well, I had a week.
Okay. So anyway, like I say, Finch turns up and Sarah has to show him what's been going on. She ends up in the office with the scientists and all the baddies all together, all in the same room. And the Doctor, meanwhile, nearly gets done in by another Tyrannosaurus Rex at the end of episode 5. because they only had Brontosauruses, Stegosauruses, and Tyrannosaurus Rex models. Oh, and of course, the Pterodactyl at the time. And then a very unlikely thing happens. A Brontosaurus squares up to the T-Rex. Now, I think what may probably have happened in those circumstances, the Brontosaurus would have tried to leg it, but got caught up and eaten by the T-Rex. I don't think he would have squared up to it. I may be wrong. But obviously, the Brontosaurus, being a sort of a vegetable-eating dinosaur, wouldn't have been particularly interested in battling it.
Can you come and sort your dog out, please?
I've got to go and sort my dog out now. Bear with.
What's up with him?
Okay, so
if we're sorting the dogs out, magic comes before star because M's before S.
That's true. Yes, that's very true. Yes. So who would win then with a Stegosaurus and a Tyrannosaurus? Because the Tyrannosaurus is obviously a bit more lethal. The Stegosaurus is actually quite big, and I think one good whack would wipe the Tyrannosaurus out. You know, it's sort of like a flyweight boxer fighting a heavyweight boxer, isn't it?
What, a Stegosaurus and a T-Rex?
Yeah.
Think about in Fantasia, the Stegosaurus is killed.
I've Oh, yeah. God, yes.
Stegosauruses have some great armor and what do you call it? Defenses, you know, with the spiky tail and the spikes on their head and that big bony fan. I don't think the Tyrannosaurus could do much to a Stegosaurus.
It's like a good whack for the tail would wipe the T-Rex.
Yeah, with those spikes, yeah.
Yeah.
And for over 50 years, the Disney company has had, in one place or another, a full-scale reproduction of a Tyrannosaurus and a Stegosaurus battling each other. Started at the New York World's Fair, and then they copied it over at Disneyland, and then they put it in Epcot.
I'll be to Epcot. So who do you think would win then? I think Stegosaurus actually stands a fair chance.
Yeah, well, I do,
it's got
too.
A tail.
But not a Brontosaurus.
Exactly, anyway. Yeah. So Kirby, what do you think?
No, as I said, in Fantasia, the Stegosaurus gets killed.
Okay.
So
sorry about the dog incident there. I'm getting back to the story now, but thank you for filling in.
Master. Adam, that was the curious incident. The dog in the night time, was it?
Anyway, where are we going?
Master, for goodness sake.
Master, magic comes before star because of alphabetical order. There, they're sorted out.
So the doctor gets rescued by... although I think they watched the battle or the thing. Basically, he gets rescued by the fact the two dinosaurs are fighting, and then Finch is sort of trying to throw his weight around a little bit, and eventually, there's a great scene in which Benton saves the day by basically overpowering Yates, friend of the show, Richard Franklin. What?
Does he have a
pack? Yes, Yates comes in, points a gun anyway, he overpowers him.
No. It's Bryson with a cup of tea to start with that does Yates in, isn't it?
What happens? Finch. See, what happens is, he does. He comes in with a cup of tea. That Yates then is distracted because he's got his gun pointing, and Benton grabs Yates and wrestles him down to the ground.
Yes.
So it is Benton actually.
remind me when we've had Richard Franklin on the show.
Well, that would have been October last year when I interviewed him on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast while at the Dimensions convention.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's
which
right.
Obviously you didn't bother listening to.
No, I did listen to it.
Oh, you did listen to it.
I complained about your microphone at one point.
Oh, you complained about my microphone. Anyway, back to the story. So Mike tries to explain himself. Sarah goes back to the spaceship and... then there's suddenly loads more people who weren't in it earlier because they've been
waking up.
I was going to say because they're back to where they need to be. There's a race against time because the scientists have decided they better speed up the knocking things back in time process, and they just about get back to the what got me the funniest bit is when the politician bloke is trying to convince them they are actually on a spaceship by doing a spacewalk.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, they try to get back to try and stop the scientists from pressing the big button. And
was it lever, not a button actually?
All right, lever then. But eventually, they do actually press the lever. But the Doctor, being a Time Lord, is able to undo everything. He's immune to it because he's the Time Lord. And he says this to Sarah, doesn't he? Because I'm a Time Lord. Or Sarah says, but don't tell me it's because you're a Time Lord. And that sort of thing.
Yeah. And also they reverse the polarity, haven't they?
Yeah, and yeah. So
they did reverse the polarity.
Because Miles goes over to, I don't know his actual character name, but he said, don't touch it, he's reversed the polarity.
Whittaker.
Yeah, that's the one. David Whittaker, he wrote the story, didn't he?
And he's playing the next Doctor, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
Jodie Whittaker.
Oh,
dearie me. Right, so that's it then. Right. Invasion of the Dinosaurs. I managed to get through it in the end, Mary, despite several efforts by a few people to try and blatantly stop it from happening. Like I say, forget about the rubbish dinosaurs, because that's all people think about with this story, and I don't think that's fair. It is a bit padded in some areas. There are sort of a couple of little silly plot holes in it. But it is, in my view, it's charmingly good. And actually, I really enjoy... Every time I watch this story, I do really, really enjoy it. I get more and more used to the rubbish dinosaurs because I'm expecting them. yes. I do get irritated by Finch, but you're supposed to get irritated by him. But the ensemble of cast and crew with the, you know, with the Brigadier back to being more normal Brigadier and everything like that. Like you say, Benton was fantastic. It's a bit of a almost last homage to the John Pertwee unit years, and it's just a shame they couldn't actually have had better dinosaurs in it, because I think it would have almost made this perfect Doctor Who. But it's not perfect, but it is good. I'd say it's a good story. Certainly not as good as the previous one. It's a good story. Maybe one episode too long. I'll give you that. One episode too long. But it was a one-parter and then a five-parter, as I said at the beginning. Mary's dying to get a word in, but she's not going to get one yet. Andy, what did you think?
I'm with you. It was too long. I think, again, without a lot of Pertwees, there's a very, very good four-part story in here. Unfortunately,
no, I say five,
it made a six-part story that was enjoyable. It's a good romp. There's a lot of padding in there that could have come out. So there was, you know, Sarah, it was the running up and down into spaceships rather than, but actually it was not running up and down corridors as well. I thought what made it as well was the small cast. So I mean, you got a lot of character development. So if you think about it, Unit was only really Brig, Mike, Benson and Bryson, plus a few soldiers. There was Finch, Butler and Whittaker, the Doctor and Sarah. You know, it was a good tight cast.
The amount of time it took you to actually read out that cast makes it sound like it's rather a large cast actually there, Andy. But
yeah, for a six-parter, they all played very, very strong parts.
Yes, they did.
It's very much a character-driven one.
It was.
And what you got very quickly, each had their own agenda. And I think given the green agenda we have these days,
yeah,
you can understand why Grover...
And the nuclear one as well. The nuclear agenda as well.
You understand, yeah, they each passionately believed in what they were doing.
Yeah.
And you can think about it, for quite good reasons. You know,
and they've been driven mad by it.
I think Mike's been driven mad by it.
I think they all have.
I think Grover genuinely believed it. I'm not sure where Finch really came in. I was a bit puzzled by Finch. I couldn't quite work him out. Talking of the dinosaurs, though, he's got a couple of dinosaur books to read to at night, and he came at the end of episode two, just got back from nursery, and he said, "Dinosaur!" The T-Rex came in.
Was that the voice he used as well?
Well, he's 2 years old, he's got quite a high-pitched voice. But he actually was hiding behind the door to watch the dinosaurs, because he actually did find it quite scary. But for him, they were quite realistic. So I think they're not brilliant, but they work. You know, if they work for a two-year-old boy, I think they work really well.
Yeah.
I mean, it was excuse me, it was quite interesting watching reacting to the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think it's a very well-written story.
Yeah.
It was, I'd say, two episodes too long, rather than one episode too long, but it's got a real story to tell. I think it's very relevant to where we are now.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the nuclear, there's the green, the pollution, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think it works really, really well. Excellent story. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thumbs up for me.
Thank you. I was going to remark on something you said then. I forgot what it was. Oh, well, never mind. Kirby, what did you think?
Well, like I said a little bit earlier, I have started this twice before this past week by watching the first episode and gotten so turned off by the rubbish dinosaurs that I didn't give the story a chance. And I'm kicking myself for that because I love this story.
Wow.
Once I got past the... Thank you. Once I got past the rubbish dinosaurs and was able to just basically ignore them, this was a really good story. It was not padded. You two guys are wrong. It's the perfect length.
That's what she said.
The entire spaceship thing was just a surprise to me, and I loved it. I sat here down here with Fred to watch this. We watched it in two pieces. First three episodes, I believe, was last Sunday night, and then Monday night we finished it up.
No.
And
bye, Adam. Bye.
What?
Turn that off.
Get
you. Is he gone again? It's actually Kirby. You said you ignore the dinosaurs. Did I get that right?
What?
Kirby, you said you ignored the dinosaurs.
I ignored the rubbish look of them.
I'm going to say, does that mean, was it invasion of the...
I've watched more of Planet of the Spiders than this one, although I've not watched all of Planet of the Spiders, but I was wondering why Yates, what was going on with Yates that in Planet of the Spiders why they were referring to him the way he was, and realized it was because, now I know it's because of what happened in this story.
I mean, basically, a mental breakdown, I think. You know, that's what I mean. These days where we're more caught on mental health, I think that's what you have to do realize. That's where, you know, he's in a very, very bad place.
Yes. So, anyway, loved it. Absolutely loved it. Perfect length.
That's what she
said. Great Third Doctor story.
Magic is fretting big time. I don't know why he's fretting. He's having
fretting, a bit of farting, I thought he said.
No, he's not himself at all.
And I'm bracing myself for Mary's take on this.
Da, da, da.
Slow down.
Well, I'll talk
about what. Excuse me.
Hang on.
I thought you were busy with magic.
I'm not too much time to play that. I'm going to lean back and see what's the matter with him. Carry on.
Well, I have very mixed reactions to this story. I went into it knowing that it is considered one of the more rubbish stories because of the dinosaurs and because of wobbly sets. Now, so I like you guys, kind of dismissed the dinosaurs because I know that was the best they could do then. They didn't bother me that much. In fact, I found them quite amusing.
yes.
But I didn't see the wobbly sets. So.
Oh, yeah.
Where?
I can tell you where they are. It's when the doctor went down and they were shutting those shutters behind him to direct him back to the lift.
Uh-huh.
Every time the shutters drop, the entire set goes.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I didn't notice.
How did that go again?
The click film for windows in the space. you know, the supposed spaceship, their windows were cling film. So, you know, that was the best that I could tell. but I do agree with Andy that it is too long and it's very padded. That whole chase scene and Sarah, you know, escaping the spaceship and then being caught again. To me, that was just all, you know, to me, just a lot of padding that really didn't contribute anything to the story. In fact, speaking of Sarah Jane, I think that this whole story should be renamed Sarah Jane Trusts Too Easily.
Yes.
Yeah. Every time she turns around, she's spilling the beans to the nearest person, which, of course, only gets her into trouble.
Indeed.
I actually found myself feeling sorry for the dinosaurs. I mean, they're getting kind of yanked out of their own environment, you know, and plucked down in cities where they would be very confused and not know where they were or what was going on.
The novelization makes a piece that does that. I think he actually does sort of always have the mindset of one of the dinosaurs. And he actually does exactly that, Mary, the fact that he's saying, yeah, the dinosaurs are totally confused, you know, because in the jungle, suddenly he's in a totally alien environment and can't understand it. So you understand, you know, would they have just sort of basically gone into themselves and hidden, basically?
Yeah, I would think so. So to me, it was kind of cruelty to dinosaurs that was going on. And I had a hard time. I have to agree with Andy that this story is very character driven. And I think the acting in this is superb on the part of everybody, including Elizabeth Sladen. But for some reason, I can't warm up to her. I think she does an amazing job. She in every scene, totally contributing to everything that's going on. But there's something about her that I can't warm up to her.
I agree.
There's a coldness there that I just cannot relate to.
She hasn't quite found her feet yet, has she?
She worked better with Tom Baker than with John Pertwee.
Well, and it may be that in these stories, she doesn't spend that much time with the doctor. We don't see her relating to him that much.
That's a good point.
Or with anybody else, you know, that you feel like there is a conduit to her to get to know her better.
Mm. Well, I think is it because she's a journalist? She can't trust people. Well, as she does in this one. She's got to. Yes, you're right. I just shot myself completely in the foot there. But the point is, she's got to have that sort of keep that distance between her and other people because of a journalist, where she's got to try and get inside them, so to speak.
Well, she comes across as a little abrasive. I don't know because I can't fault anything she's doing as an actress in this. So it's not like she's a bad actress. It's just her character. It's her character that so far I'm not fond of. One nice thing, nobody died in this. And the Grover, I mean, he didn't want Sarah Jane killed. He actually was wishing her, you know, good luck and hoping that they could even be friends later when she sees the new golden age. So I thought,
you know, somebody did die. That loot, the first looter died, didn't they?
Yeah. The what?
Oh, okay. Well,
sorry, Mary. I do take your point. I mean, of the main characters, no one died. Though, goodness knows what happened to Grover and Whittaker when they went back in time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wouldn't. You know, really high, you know, somewhere in the middle of all the things so far.
Andy, your coffin is drowning out Mary. Sorry, it's digitally drowning out.
Sorry.
Okay. I'm just saying that this story doesn't rank very high for me. It's about in the middle, you know, I'd give it like a 5 out of 10 or something.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mary.
Sorry, I've got to get myself a drink. Sorry.
Okay, mate. Right, okay, so where do we get up to? Right, so eventually we quite liked it. I think we can establish from
that.
So, looking on the feed, now, I posted a request for feedback, which everybody ignored. But Kirby one Ian Burge says, dinosaurs, what rot? I tell you, Doctor, if there are dinosaurs out there, I'm a Chinaman. I think that might be a quote.
Okay.
He's making some sort of connection with Lee Sin Chang.
Of course. Nice one. And we also have on the live feed, Ian Kirk says he's posted his transcript for his feedback. And then it says, the Golgafrinchans are on a different arc in space.
Yes.
And then Laurie Nick says, late to the party. Hello, all. Hope I didn't miss Ian's review. Well, no, you haven't, Laurie. I've got 4 viewers at the moment. It's unheard of. There's probably half of them are actually on the show. So let's see what I can find in my little inbox here.
Do you know what Ian Kirk's Golgafrinchans reference is?
No, I don't. But while I find the emails, you're going to tell me, aren't you?
It's only VR.
It's the second part of... No, actually, it's in the main part of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy first series.
Right.
The Golgafrinchans are the telephone sanitizers and the captain in the bathtub. They're on an arc in space.
Okay, thank you for
that. Is that the B arc, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the B arc.
Ah. Okay.
TV directors.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Andy, you're moving again. Your video is moving.
Does it mean matter? Right then.
Yes.
Mary.
Yes.
Something's arriving.
Oh, no.
Alan, what are you doing to us?
But that's the sort of half of it, I'm afraid, because he sent 2 feedbacks in, and you've just received the first one.
Oh, dear. We'll be at this for a while.
I don't know about that. That's what she said, by the way.
Let's see here.
Isn't it? The Potato Warrior of Time in a Medieval Mashup. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you want me to read that now?
Oh, well, yes, please.
Okay. All right, big breath.
Yep.
The Potato Warrior of Time in a Medieval Mashup. Dear 20 Megabyters, the Time Warrior is, of course, a closely studied explication of West England. The exigencies of the Anglo-Norman state are taking their toll on the newly established baronial hegemony, which is challenged by a robber baron at a time when stretched by the incessant call to provide ferds, P-F-E-R-D-S, ferds.
Don't ask me.
Yeah, this villain turned villain has taken a castle unlicensed and assumes control without any appropriate enfeoffment. That's exactly how it's spelled. It should be noted, however, that as both of these claimants to power are equally corrupt and morally bankrupt. So the introduction of the alien element clarifies the Doctor's adoption of the alternate side on much of the same basis as in the Time Meddler. The alien explosion at the Denouement restores history in a neutral fashion. We also learn that the dot cotton took a significant fall in social status of the following centuries. Also, Boba Fett honed his skills in early medieval England before somehow escaping to a galaxy far, far away a long time ago. All in all, the Time Warrior is another and by no sheer luck, Holmesian masterpiece. By a greatly humorous script, Holmes provides a faultless historical story, which is Doctor Who at its most entertaining. This is a credit to the, Quadra Hebdomadal format, which the Letts / Dix Gestalt felt was the best for Doctor Who when they could afford it. Next up, Doctor Who in the Golden Age of the Large Plastic Models of Dinosaurs. Alan T. Busher.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you also for the next bit I've just sent, Mary. But while you're digesting stuff and drawing breath, I think we'll do a bit of this.
Okay.
Hello, 20 McMahon Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Me.
Invasion of the Dinosaurs by Malcolm Hulk. Dinosaurs and the spaceship. No purple dinosaurs. Artificial gravity would be impressive if that was a spaceship. Why would the minister need a spacesuit to travel in the shuttle? Sarah Jane takes flash photos through a window. She lost her camera, but it would mostly have shown the reflection of the flash.
Mary, you said that.
Fooling people they are on a space flight has been reused recently in a show called Ascension.
Ah.
I thought the dinosaurs were as good as you could expect, given the budget.
Yep.
Hello, hello. Aristocrat Ruth looks familiar. It's Cam and Samira from the story The Celestial Toymaker.
Yes.
Bye for now.
Picking up on everything that Kirby. So he's really out-Kirby'd Kirby on this particular episode. Well done, Ian. And Mary, guess what? Oh, sorry, Kirby. You're going to say something.
Nothing.
Okay. Yes. Go on in, Mary. This is the last bit of feedback that Ian has... that Alan T. Butcher has sent through. It's a bit longer, though, so take a big, deep breath.
And let's hope there's no more words like quadra hebdomadal.
I think you find there are.
Good luck with that.
Hexabedamundadal is one of the words he has reused.
Okay. The large, rubbery, austerity dinosaurs invade London. Dear 20 Megabiters, the invasion of the dinosaurs is, of course, a closely studied and, once again, swiftly a satire of conservative extremism with its tendency to compartmentalize society for the benefit of the few with no regard whatsoever for the interests of the many. How true. Yeah. Unlike Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal, in which the mooted solution to starvation in Ireland was to eat the children, here the suggestion is a small number of people will be able to reach a golden age at the meager expense of deleting the existences of billions of others. Even most of the beneficiaries are kept in the dark, as only the tiniest percentage can be trusted to go along with the true horror of the policy. Mike Yates is plainly a representation of a class traitor misled by the duplicitous conservative conspirators to betraying his comrades. The use of the term golden age is a clearly an allusion to the medieval attitude which forms the basis for modern conservatism. It is opposition to progress from the backward-looking, harking back to a former era of greatness to be venerated and aspired to, though it may never be obtained again. It should be noted that whilst many, not least the Letts / Dix Gestalt, are critical of the poor rendering of the dinosaurs in this story, there is limited evidence of the skin textures and movement techniques of the dinosaurs presented. It is possible the real dinosaur skin actually looked fake and rubbery, that they really moved shoddily in an unlikely fashion. We also learn that Niter's early fascist phase took place in London, and that at least one of the Celestial Toymaker's characters did escape his world to France, and then on to London after the Second World War.
Yes.
All in all, the invasion of the dinosaurs is a stinging riposte to extremist conservatism.
I think that's riposte, but we'll let you off that one.
Riposte to extremist conservatism that should not surprise us from the pen of the credible Hulk. The story led directly into the first general election campaign of 1974. Less than 2 weeks after the last episode, the conservative government was voted out of office. This is yet another credit to the well-filed, oh golly, hexahabdomadal format, which the Letts slash Dix Gestalt were the master of in Doctor Who. Next up, Doctor Who and the 1970s energy crisis of the Daleks. Alan P. Butcher. Had to throw that word in there again, didn't you, Alan?
Yeah, he loves that word, doesn't he?
So, any of Alan's feedback's not closely studied.
Yeah, no,
yes,
but that's...
they're always...
Yeah, always.
But it has to be now. But it's just the way things are.
So does he have like a magnifying glass? He's like this.
Right.
I want him to collect all of his feedback essays into a book.
Yes, yeah, so that would be a good thing.
He could call it a closely studied.
Yeah, never mind, Kirby. Never mind, Kirby. All right, let's move on. Talking back to the Isle of Wight Comic Con, I forgot to mention earlier that we will be selling exclusive pin badges with the 20 megabyte logo on it for £2.50 a time. So if you do come along, enter the competition, and you can only get that's one of the cheapest things you can buy at the convention, a 20 megabyte badge. And very, very exclusive.
Why can't we get them?
Because they're exclusive. The word exclusive means only available at the Isle of Wight Comic Con. Right then, so...
So what if you don't sell them all?
Pardon?
What if you've got stock left over? What are you
going to
do with those?
Oh, of course I'm not going to have stock left over.
You could send one of them to Georgia and another one to Ohio.
Yeah.
Moving on, I'm just trying I'm trying to get people to enter the competition. Right then, it's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
You're right.
Right then. So, Mary, who do you think is going to be ahead after the quiz questions?
Kirby.
Good luck with that one. And Andy, who do you think is going to be ahead after the quiz questions?
Kirby.
Oh, good Lord. You've got a load of rubbish, aren't you? Kirby, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the quiz questions?
Andy.
I think that's a bit more likely. Hang on. I nearly put the wrong person in there. Andy. Right. Mary, who do you think is going to be at the bottom?
Me.
Oh, I nearly put it down as Carey. That would have been wrong, wouldn't it? Mary. Andy, who do you think is going to be at the bottom?
Sorry, Mary.
No, sorry,
I'm
Mary.
Sorry, Mary.
Kirby, who do you think is going to be at the bottom?
Mary.
Yes. Okay, remember you have a joker each and the current scores before we get started. Mary, were you here last week, Mary?
No.
Oh, dear. Okay, so at the moment...
Oh, you won't know about the new round, will you, Mary?
In last place with no points, it's Kirby. In second place with 2 points, it's Mary. In the lead with 5 points, it's Andy. Right, Mary, allow me to explain. There are 3 different rounds of questionings now, because you lot are rubbish and don't bother listening to the show. There is now a new round on last week's episode of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Okay, so the first question goes to Mary, mm-hmm. and it's, remember, on last week's show, which celebrity's bumper opened the show?
From last week?
Mm.
Yeah.
All right, I will guess Colin Baker.
Nope. Anybody?
Sophie Aldred.
Well, that in itself tells a story, doesn't it? That you still didn't bother listening to the show.
I already told you before we started. I didn't listen.
The answer was Ellis George, and all the listeners would know this.
Oh.
Yes. Andy.
Yeah.
Who was the first co-presenter to speak after me?
Kirby.
Now, you were actually on the show last week, weren't you?
Yes.
Good grief.
That means it was me then, wasn't it?
The next person, anybody want to come through with the correct answer?
It's Andy.
Nope, it was Debbie. Right. Okay, you're doing really well so far, everybody. The same as usual. Right, Kirby.
Master.
Who said, well, I thought he knew what it was?
I think I know.
Andy.
Does every answer have to be Andy?
Yes.
Go on then, Andy. Who do you think it was?
I'm going with Kirby.
Good grief. Oh, no, it's opened up in iTunes. No, it hasn't. Where is it? Oh, it has. Yeah. No, it wasn't Kirby. The answer was Debbie. Doing really well so far, everybody. 6 points in the bonus pot. And this is the 6 points in the bonus pot question.
Thank you.
What was Isabella's favourite Doctor Who story? There's a poison the mouse over the appropriate... Oh, it's all gone very quiet.
Well, we've learned our lesson. Well,
I'm not adding more points to the bonus pot. We'll just move on to the next question. Still in the bonus pot. The answer was Empty Child Doctor Dances. All the listeners would have known this. Okay. Which celebrity bumper was played just before the feedback?
Colin Baker.
Sylvester McCoy.
Nope. Still 6 points.
Sylvester McCoy.
Pot. Nope. It was Nabil Shaban. Okay, right. Whose feedback on the video feed was mentioned first?
Just Ivor.
Anybody?
Ian.
Alan T. Butcher.
Laurie Nix was the answer. Which doctor spoke just before the quiz?
Colin Baker.
Sylvester McCoy.
No, ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston. Who said, I don't know the exact amount. I can guess.
Me.
Yeah!
Finally. We can get out of this loop.
Thank God for that.
Okay, yeah. Right. Mary, your question.
All right.
Which celebrity bumper appeared just after the quiz?
Let's see. What's your name? Eighth Doctor Companion. Can't think of her name.
No, it was Andrew Cartmell. Sorry, I'm not going to give anybody any bonuses on this one.
No, I'm just saying Colin Baker's. I got it wrong anyway. So yeah.
Anyway, you got it wrong. All right. So Andy. Andy.
Yes. Sorry, I was coughing. Sorry.
Who said? By the way, they're open until 4:30 p.m.
I know.
Hang on, Andy. I think he was going to actually come up with the answer. Andy?
Debbie.
I know.
I think Kirby knows because he said he knows twice. Yeah?
Yes, I did.
Yes, Kirby did. Right, Kirby, your question.
Master?
Whose voice whispered, goodbye, Doctor, just before the end of the podcast?
Debbie.
Isabella.
By the way, Mary's keeping out of this debacle. No, the answer was Clara, as played by Jenna Coleman. Okay, right.
So obviously, we need to listen
into this debacle as
well. So we got 4 points in the bonus spot for the question. Whose voice did we last hear on the podcast?
Kirby.
Debbie.
Nope. It was Isabella. It's always Isabella. She always says this disclaimer at the end of every episode.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
always Isabella. That was an easy one. Right, moving on. And there's still 4 points in the bonus pot. Moving on to the questions on Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Is this a bonus pot question?
Still, yes. 4 points available for this question, and it is which London landmark was seen first? And you must say this correctly.
I think I know.
Go on, Em.
It was the Elizabeth Tower, which holds Big Ben.
Oh, I know. I should have let you finish that, shouldn't I? But no, that's not the answer I'm looking for. Yeah, go what? On then. Sorry, Kirby.
Did you
go on, Kirby, what's the answer?
The Albert Embankment.
Oh, good grief. That's not the answer I wanted. You lot are rubbish. The answer was the Houses of Parliament. That's all I wanted, a simple answer.
But hang
houses
on a minute.
Never mind the Victoria Tower.
The Houses of Parliament.
Yes, and, the, and we were seeing...
No, I wanted
and we were,
the
and
houses...
And we were seeing it from the Albert Embankment.
I wanted Houses of Parliament. That was the answer I was looking for. All right, so another 6 points now in the bonus pot for this question.
Andy and I both got it.
Yeah,
6
you,
points in the bonus pot for this question, right. Complete Sarah's opening line. Seems to be blank.
All right.
Is the correct answer at last.
Should have played his Joker, Kirby.
Should have played his Joker, yes. Double points for Jokers.
I keep forgetting. I do have this, but I forgot.
Current scores are... In last place with 2 points is Mary. In second place with 5 points is Andy. In the lead with 13 points, it's Kirby. Next question goes to Mary, and it's this. Where did we see the number plate? LMP116K.
I know.
On the transport truck that took the doctor and Sarah.
Nope. Andy knows.
It was on the Morris Marina that was driven by the stereotypical thief looter.
Correct. Right. Andy.
Yep.
What type of weapon did the first looter have?
It was a shotgun.
Precisely, I'm talking for on this one.
A double barrel shotgun.
Sorry, can't give you that one. Sorry.
I know.
Go on, then.
It's on off shotgun.
Here's the correct answer. Oop, shit. Oop, sorry, I swore then.
I beg your
pardon.
Sorry.
I apologise. It was a sawn-off shotgun. Right then. Andy. Kirby.
Master.
What was the first dinosaur we saw? Dinosaur we saw? I didn't realise I wrote that. I'm a poet. Didn't know it.
T-Rex. Oh,
good grief. Nope. Anybody?
I think Stegosaurus.
Nope, it was a pterodactyl.
Master?
What?
Pterodactyls are not actually dinosaurs.
Mary, help.
What was the first rubbish monster from the past may have covered it?
I'm not going to stand for that. No, I'm not going to stand for that. Right, okay, so it's pterodactyl in my view. They're all... sort of pterodactyls, so they're dinosaurs in my view, and that's that. Right, so where do we get up to? That was Kirby's question, wasn't it?
Yes.
Right. So we've got 4 points in the bonus pot. Right, spell, this is Mary, sorry, spell pterodactyl.
Oh, this isn't a bonus question, this is my question?
This is your, bonus pot question. Sorry, everybody, sorry, beg your pardon.
I'll have a go, I'll have a go.
Andy's having a go. He's reading it out from his book, which is cheating, but carry on.
There's your book. I put it down. Okay, right.
Go on, then.
Okay. Right. P T E R Y.
No.
D.
Shut up, Kirby. Right.
I got it.
Point deducted for Kirby for interrupting. It is wrong. It is wrong, Andy. So we're going to, and right. Kirby's reading it off somewhere, but apparently Kirby knows. So you see, he's going to interrupt and do it right. Go on, then.
P-T-E-R-O-D-A-C-T-Y-L.
Is the correct answer. And I don't really know if I should really give him those points, but there you go.
Well, he's knocked one off him anyway, so...
yeah, it's true.
I could have done the same as you, Andy.
Yeah. Yes, Kirby got it right. It was P-T-E-R-O-D-A-C-T-Y-L.
Oh, I got Penny.
I had just typed it into Wikipedia. That's how I knew.
Yes, you're a cheat. Because that's what you're trying to say, Kirby.
To prove to you that they're not dinosaurs.
Never mind that. Right, so, Mary, this is your question. Yeah. I do apologise. I'm getting interrupted by people. How many people have the army evacuated by episode 1?
I know.
I don't know. I didn't write that down.
Oh. Andy says he knows.
8 million.
That's a correct answer. All right, Andy's question. What rank was the army officer in What rank was the army officer that first interviewed the doctor and Sarah?
I will go with a captive.
Nope.
Sergeant. Sergeant.
Yes, okay.
Hang on, the sergeant's not an officer.
What?
A sergeant is not an officer.
Did I say officer? Oh, well, yes, maybe I did. Irrelevant. Irrelevant.
No, he's not a
point deductive for Andy.
Andy, I agree with you. He's not an officer.
Point deducted for Andy. Point deducted for Kirby for being blooming awkward. No, that is... we're sticking with that because everybody knew what I was talking about. Because it was the only person that interviewed them, so it would have been the rank of that person. They weren't interviewed by anybody else, so you're not gonna, that's not going to stand up in court. Right. Who was that question originally for?
Me.
Right.
Andy.
Kirby.
Master.
All right. Where did we see the number plate HTB224F? You won't get this one.
Probably the transport truck that they stuffed the doctor in.
Anybody?
Did ever Charles Grover have a transport? Because that's a non-military plate.
That's not
normal...
an answer. That's a question. I'm looking for an answer.
I think it's going to be on... Oh, gold. It's Charles Grover's transport.
No, it was on the wall in the garage while the medieval bloke appeared. There was a number plate hanging off the wall, and it was that one.
Okay.
Bonus pot question. How many sugars do we know the doctor put in his mug?
I know.
Going in, Mary?
We saw him put in 4.
Yeah, you should have played your joker.
That's true. Well done, Mary, anyway. Right. Nobody's played their joker as yet, but the scores are in last place with 6 points each. It's Andy and Mary, and in the lead with 17 points, it's Kirby.
Sorry.
Next question goes to Mary, mm-hmm. and it's, what was Benton's colour for pterodactyl?
I know.
Yeah, I know as well.
I'll use my joker here. Yes. Pink.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's actually pink for your actual pterodactyl.
Yes, it was. Andy.
That's brilliant. That's it. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
What was the radio operator's name?
Ogden.
Say that again?
Ogden.
Is the correct answer.
I wasn't sure. I didn't play Joker.
I was going to say, I wonder why you didn't play Joker on that one.
No, I wasn't sure.
Okay. Kirby.
Master.
The doctor's blackboard had a diagram of what on it?
Haven't the foggiest.
I know.
Hang on, I've got to play that for Kirby. And then put one of them in the bonus pot. And Mary knows.
It's the diagram of the eye and optic nerve.
It was indeed.
Blimey, well spotted, Mary.
So there's 1 point in the bonus
pot. She mentioned it earlier.
She did?
Yeah.
Right, this is the bonus pot question for 1 point. To complete the doctor's line, oh, Brigadier, have you your fellows brought blank blank to Unit HQ for me yet?
That new car of mine.
Nope. Anybody? I'll repeat it. Oh, Brigadier, have you your fellows brought... I'll start
Oh,
again.
No,
oh,
it's
Brigadier,
not.
Oh, Brigadier, have your fellows brought blank blank to the unit HQ for me yet? That. I can't even say it, let alone to try to... Terrible. Sorry about that. Did you get that? The remaining people left in this question?
I would have thought it was the new car, so no. Nope.
Would you really?
Kirby, nope. Turn around. Kirby,
the answer
look behind
was,
you.
This is how he should have said it. Oh, Brigadier, have your fellows brought the TARDIS to Unish HQ for me?
Yeah, exactly. Kirby, turn around. Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah, that.
So still a point in the bonus pot for this question. What wakes up the T-Rex? How quiet is it?
The
Hang on.
Kirby started.
Yeah, you did.
The flash of the camera.
Yeah.
It was.
That's what I was going to say. We got there first, yeah.
Could have, oh, right, so remember, not many questions left. Oh, mind you, I've still got another round after this to do, actually. So, Mary?
Yes.
Right. How long did Mark claim they had been in space for?
I know.
3 months.
We all know that one.
Andy? What colour comprised the Doctor's new car? What colours, sorry, comprised the Doctor's new car?
You have no to get idea.
Both of them. Oh, okay, then.
No.
So it's a.
No.
And 1 point in the bonus pot. Anybody?
Was it white?
Silver.
Right. Black and yellow. Right.
It's not enough. The answer was silver and red. So I wanted both colours on that one. Sorry. Right. So Kirby's question, I believe, now.
Master.
What did Benton say just before the doctor paralysed him? One word.
Ouch.
That's not. You're not Kirby.
I don't know.
Anybody?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. The answer is yeah. So that's
okay.
He says, "Are you ready?" The doctor says that. Benton says, "Yeah." There we go. So there's 3 points in the bonus pot. What room was Sarah locked in?
I know.
Go on, Em.
The reminder room. Oh, she'll make a joker.
Too late.
Give it the Joker anyway.
No.
Yes, you can.
No.
I got 38 points off it last week.
No. It's true. Right. That's true, yes. So the current scores are, in last place with 11 points, it's Andy. In second place with 13 points, it's Mary. In the lead with 18 points, it's Kirby. Next question goes to Mary. Mary.
Yeah, all I'm right. Just listening.
There you are, yes. Right. Complete Sarah's line. I really do choose my blank, don't I?
Oh, yes, I know.
My friend.
Yeah.
You should have
played your Joker.
She's played her Joker.
My Joker already.
She's okay. The only one who's playing the game properly at the moment. Andy, your question.
Yeah, okay.
What dinosaur... pardon?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear myself coming back at them. That's okay,
okay. Okay. Here is your question, then. What what dinosaur appears before the Doctor at the end of episode 5?
Brontosaurus. Oh, should have been Living Joker.
Right. Yes, you should have.
I keep hearing myself. Adam, I can hear myself coming back.
Well, it's nothing to do with me. Kirby.
Faster.
I'm going to go up to. What age was Yates hoping to find himself in?
Oh, I know if he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm gonna risk my Joker.
Yes.
Golden age.
Yeah.
I love the way she's gonna risk it.
Risk it. They only say a golden age about 1,000 times.
Yeah, they say golden age a whole bunch in that episode.
No points in the bonus spot for once. That's rare. Okay, next question goes to Mary.
All right.
Where did the number plate 16DM33? appear?
I know.
Go that's the Brigadier's plate.
Bad luck, the Andy. What? The Brigadier's number plate.
Brigadier's plate.
Okay.
You thought it was something else, didn't you, Kirby?
Yes.
Well, you were wrong, weren't you, Kirby?
Yes.
Andy.
Hello.
I also didn't think I would do that well with this quiz.
Okay. Andy.
Yes.
When the General says Benton will be court-martialed, how does Benton respond?
He said, like, quite probably, sir.
Not quite.
Because he's got... something like... Yeah, like
not quite, no.
Most likely or something like... Something like that, isn't it?
Master?
Yes, Kirby?
Yes, sir.
No, not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the line... Okay, I'm going to press play the jingle, haven't I? There we go. What I'm looking for is, yes, sir, very sorry, sir.
Oh, so I got only part of it.
Yes, you need to get all of it to get the point. Right, so that's the end of the questions about the invasion of the dinosaurs part of the round. We've got a few more questions before the end of the quiz. And there's a bonus pot question for this one. This is a Trivial Pursuit question. Everybody's up for this one. What name does Donna give to the Doctor's daughter when she is created in the progenitor machine in the room? Basically, what's the name of the Doctor's daughter?
I think I know.
Go on then, Andy.
Is it Jennifer?
No. No, that's not the answer, unless it says on the back of the card. Nope. So there's still 2 points less than the bonus pot, so I want to get this one right.
Wait, what is the answer?
It's still somebody to have a go. It's bonus pot. What's the name of the Doctor's daughter?
Jenny.
Oh!
That's what he said.
He said Jennifer.
I said Jennifer.
He said Jennifer. Please listen.
Oh. He said Jennifer? Oh,
yes. Yeah, see, I just heard Jenny. Something in my
I heard Jenny. Say, yeah, I'm sorry, going, what?
No, no, yeah, no, he said Jennifer, and he knows he said it too.
Right. Yeah, no, got it wrong.
So, scores at the moment for the next round of questionings are in last place with 13 points, Andy, in second place with 17 points, Mary.
Boy, was I wrong.
24 points, it's Kirby. So, Mary, this is your question.
Yeah. Okay.
When the 10th Doctor is transformed into a teacher named John Smith, what name does he give the diary that he fills with tales of monsters and other worlds?
Oh, is it the Tales of Impossible Things?
I'm going to give you that one.
Yeah,
it's near enough.
What is it?
Journal of Impossible Things, but that's you've got most of the words. There's only one word out, so I'm not going to be horrible on that one. I think that's a very good answer,
yeah,
isn't it, Kirby?
He'll cut you some slack. He won't cut the rest of us.
No, I won't. That was I would have gone everybody that point. Shut up, Kirby.
Well, and
right.
I thank him for that. I thank him.
Right, Andy.
Yeah.
What did the Rani's scientifically enlarged mouse eat that led to her exile from Gallifrey?
The Lord President.
That's a good answer, but it's wrong. Anybody? No?
No.
Okay, it's the president's cat was the answer, so I'm not to play this jingle. That's why I said Andy's was a good answer. Will you stop breathing on me? Lord.
Dog. Sorry.
The dog is huffing everywhere. Okay, this is a Kirby's question.
Master.
On what planet would you find the untempered schism?
Gallifrey.
What? God, that was so obvious.
Yeah.
Ooh, sorry. I don't write these questions. Right, bonus pot, 2 points. Doc is panting like mad. I don't think he's very well, actually. What kind of strange weapon does Rory's father, Brian, use to fight off the pterodactyl?
I know.
Morning, Mary.
Yeah.
Isn't it his, like, digging spade?
Yeah. We call it a trowel in Britain, so that's good enough.
Trowel.
Right. So, now it's Mary's question. What was the full name of the leader of the first human colony on Mars that the 10th Doctor meets? We won't get this one.
Yeah, I won't. I'll just say Adam.
Nope. Anybody? Nope.
No.
Adelaide Brooks is the answer.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, it's still Andy to play his bonus, and I would advise you doing it on this question, because this is the last round of questions.
Right, I'll play
you, Joker. What's it called again?
Joker,
that's the word. Okay, this is it. Your Joker question is, what was Ace's homemade brand of explosives called?
Nitro 9!
Yes!
Yes.
Good
for
one
you,
to
Andy.
Play your Joker on then,
Thank
Andy.
Thanks, Mary.
Okay, Kirby.
Master.
What does Amy draw on the handbot that she captures and disarms when she is trapped in Apalapukusia?
A smiley face?
That's not the answer I'm looking for. Anybody?
Of course that.
No. The answer is Rory's face.
So okay.
Right. Oh, Rory's face.
So, it's been a long time since I watched that.
Now
one.
We're hanging on the the bonus pot question of 4 points until someone gets this right, and then it's the end of the quiz. What was the name of the story in which the Third Doctor visited a parallel fascist Earth where the Brigadier...
I know.
Go on then, Andy.
Inferno.
Ding.
Ding. All right.
My favourite story.
Was it? Okay.
Yes.
So,
brilliant.
So the scores are at the moment, before we tote up the obviouses. I do hope this dog's not going to be sick on me. In last place with 20 points, it's Mary.
Yeah, see, I ended up at the bottom anyway.
In second place, with 21 points, it's Andy. And in the lead at the moment, with 26 points, it's Kirby. However...
One point. Yes,
Mary predicted Kirby to be ahead. Therefore, doubling that part to 40, and she predicted herself to be at the bottom, doubling that part to 80.
They all won that one.
Andy predicted Kirby, doubling that one to 42, and predicted Mary, doubling that one to 84. Kirby predicted Andy, didn't do much to his score there, and Mary there. So the final scores are: in last place with 52 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 80 points, it's Mary. And the winner this week with 84 points, it's Andy.
Yay!
2 weeks running, I've won it.
I know, what a point, yeah.
Yes, the one quiz that being a smarty pants doesn't always pay off. Doctor Who News.
It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yes.
That's right.
Doctor Who News has a signed Christmas script up for auction.
Yes.
The shooting script for Peter Capaldi's last episode is being sold for a charity auction. The script for Twice Upon a Time is being auctioned to raise money for Star Trek legend William Shatner's Hollywood Charity Horse Show, a charity set up by the star to raise money to support a number of charities dedicated to helping those in need. And if you go to doctorwhonews.net, I think you can click on the link that takes you to the bidding options on it.
I somehow doubt any of us can afford it.
Right.
Well, you never know. It's currently at $1,000.
Exactly. No, forget it. No.
As you said.
The weird thing is that the article in Doctor Who News says it's been signed by... okay, as well as other members of the team, because they mentioned Peter Capaldi and David Bradley. Yeah. But you can see Nick Briggs and all sorts of people on here.
Cool. Right, Doctor Who Series 10 complete DVD, Blu-ray and Steelbook. Woo! It says, well, BBC Worldwide have released details on the release of the Series 10 Peter Capaldi's final series of The Doctor as a complete set available Monday the 13th of November. Now, I think they've missed a trick here. They could have waited to the new year. No, they want to sell stuff for Christmas and included the Christmas special, just to sort of polish off Capaldi's era in some ways.
Well, they will re-release it, including the Christmas special.
They probably will.
Sell it all over again, yeah.
They probably will, but it does include...
Also, why did they pick the 13th of November instead of the 23rd?
Don't know. Why they do that? Because it's the Doctor's birthday on the 23rd.
Right, yeah. Right.
Hang on, the Doctor's trying to be sick. He's winding me up at the moment, I tell you. On the Blu-ray, you can get Becoming the Companion Extra, Out of This World Extra, Smile Extra, Who's There, Rona Monroe, a modern classic, Doctor Who Fan Show After Shows, Doctor Who The Final Countdown, Binaural Sound, Doctor Who Extra, The Return of Doctor Mysterio, Doctor Who, A New Kind of Hero, The Finale Falls, Inside Looks, Deleted Scenes, and Audio Commentaries.
Yeah, that Return of Dr. Mysterio extra is probably the one I saw in the theater when I saw The Return of Dr. Mysterio last year.
I will say, of course, that I won't be buying any of that because I have them on at iTunes. We bought the series pass. We've got lots of good stuff on that anyway. And back to what was on last week was the Lethbridge Stewart, A New Unusual Fifth Series Limited Edition Run is available to buy, and Sharda gets animated completion. We spoke about that earlier.
Yeah,
does look rather exciting. Does it say when it's coming out?
Or when I think so. Yeah, the day before my birthday for DVD.
So I'm just moving the dog over for a part of the room.
How many versions of Sharda are there out there now?
4 or 5.
Yeah, this will be the best one though.
Yes. They really are going to the well so many times, aren't they?
This is the one I've wanted for a long time, so I'm quite pleased about it.
If anyone wants to get me a birthday present...
Yeah, when did you say your birthday was again?
5th of December.
Okay, well, I look forward to that. Anyway, so that's Doctor Who News. So next we're going to try and talk about sponsors. I've got to try and get this run through before throws up.
Sorry.
Because Magic is in a really bad... state at the moment. I don't know what's the matter with him, but he's very restless. He's panting like mad, and he's very stressed, and I don't know what's the matter with him, so I need to find out. So we've done Doctor Who News. whowon.co.uk
is that whowon.co.uk?
Genesis of the Daleks.
I believe this is whowon.co.uk.
Genesis of the
whowon.co.uk.
Shut up. Genesis of the Daleks audiobook. Dr. Seventh, we talked about this last week. It's the Mr. Man book representing the Seventh Doctor, along with a few Big Finish productions, Companion Chronicles, Ninth Doctor 1, Lives of Captain Jack. There's a new book of Hooniverse records. Sorry, that's my phone going off.
Yes, we know.
And the wonderful survival cover, as done by old friend of the show, Alistair Pearson, who may still be coming along to the Isle of Wight Comic Con as our guest, because the Comic Con themselves missed the boat somewhat, and I'm not sure Alistair was overly impressed with that, but never mind. Where have we got to? Sorry to keep you awake, Andy, and what else have we got coming up soon? I've done
sponsors.
That. We're doing sponsors now. Grief. Yeah, that's about it for whoone.co.uk, who I had to do their own logo for my lovely banner that I've got made up for the con. The next one is lavazi.co.uk. Andy's just fallen off. Sounds like it. Anyway, is scarves and stuff for Christmas for Doctor Who and Star Trek, etc. And cosplaying. The best cosplay items, light scarves and stuff, is Lavazza. You can't get any better than them. And they're our sponsors. And
I was cosplaying last night at a party. Mate of mine did an annual party, and I was just Batman.
Okay, well, that doesn't quite fit.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
Doesn't quite fit into the Lavazza thing.
Do you recognise the T-shirt, though, Kirby?
Yes.
Where was it from?
I recognise it, but I don't remember what it was.
It came from the 1989 film. It's actually 28 years old, that T-shirt is.
Yes.
It's an original for the Tim Burton film.
Marvellous, yes. It's not quite in fitting to what we're trying to do here. Of course, Star Trek items available are a Live Long and Prosper scarf and the Doctor Who... Doctor Who, God's sake! Star Trek emblem umbrella. And, of course, the lovely little scarf that has all the little blueprints of all the spaceships on Star Trek. So, I've managed to get to the end of the show. God knows how. We're not recording next week because no one's available. I'm hoping to record the following week, which is the 29th of October, when we'll be looking at, if I've got my facts correctly, Death to the Daleks. Yes, indeed.
Right, now, with the time, are we sticking at 7 o'clock UK time?
Whatever it is, it will be.
Oh, is there a time change happening?
Yes,
there?
The clocks go back an hour, Mary. So the clocks that, here go back
their,
an hour.
Their time changes, ours doesn't.
Yeah.
So
but we're
think,
still sticking
7
o'clock, though, Adam.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
So does that mean that you and I are coming on board at 3?
Yeah, I think you'll be later, won't you?
Kirby,
if the clocks went back here now, it would be 7:53 and not 8:53. So therefore, when we started the show here, it was...
Oh, then we would come on earlier because our clocks are going to fall back the following week. So need to do it at 1.
1, I think
so. We'll try and assess the time situation on the day. But yeah, that's next... 2 weeks' time when we'll be looking at Death of the Daleks. Okay, thank you everybody for participating in the show. All 15... Oh, there's nobody watching now. Everybody for listening to this. I'm just going to see if we've got any more on the comment thread.
We are so popular.
No, we've got Kirby Bartlett Sloan. Alan T. Butcher said, perfect rendition of hexahebdominal, Mary. And then
thank you.
And he also says, well, the file is building, Kirby. Might need a bit of serious editing. Excuse me. Sorry.
I shouldn't
drink fizzy drinks while doing the show, but I haven't got any choice. I'm thirsty. Perhaps I should start with a definitive Second Doctor edition. I still need to do... Oh, he's talking about the book you suggested he wrote.
Yes.
Well, maybe you get some credits for that if it works, Kirby.
Yeah.
And Laurie Nick says, still watching. I love Laurie.
She commented on my
this is for Laurie.
Statement about Sarah Jane.
She did indeed, did she? Where? I think they were trying to contrast Sarah Jane as a brash feminist, hence a bit harsh.
Yeah,
she was a bit brash, but I think, like I say, she was trying to work out how she was going to play, or they were trying to work out how they wanted her to play the part, and I think by the end of the poetry era, she was more or less herself. But we'll see on that one.
We haven't gotten to get to the end of the poetry era.
And we'll have to get to the end of this podcast. So until next time, thank you for listening, watching, or whatever you did to the show. Don't forget to enter that competition to win two tickets for the Isle of Wight Comic Con. All you've got to do is like the pinned post at the top of the 20megabyte.2 podcast Facebook group. Until next time.
Do I need to unlike it since I'm not eligible?
No, you don't. Until next time. Goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
This is Colin Baker, and you are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And doesn't make... I'll do it again.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV service of production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.